This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Picked up by Radulov. Hintz cutting for the net. Backhand shot by Lindell. He scores! 2-0 Dallas.
Jets win the draw. Morrissey scores! Josh Morrissey rips it from the line. Traffic in front. And the Jets have tied this game up 1-1 with a power play marker.
Esa Lindell scoring for the Dallas Stars. Josh Morrissey scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. We'll explain the connection between the two momentarily. But first, good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We hope you enjoyed TSN1290's exclusive radio coverage of Canada defeating Germany at the World Hockey Championships.
Yeah, barn burner.
Yeah, I didn't see
8-1.
Was it 8-1? I think I saw. But Mark Stone, he had a hat trick.
Yeah,
that's about the extent of the game that I saw. I was running around with the kids this morning, so
it's unbelievable. Like Mark Stone was. What did he have? 12 points in the first round.
He was on fire.
Right,
with
so
the
he had 12 Knights. Points in the first round, and he's just been tearing it up at the World Hockey Championship. But obviously, after Canada dropped that initial game against Finland, I mean, they've just been steamrolling everybody.
Well, they had a hard-fought battle. Was against Slovakia that they won with, I think, Stone actually.
Like with the second
Stone scored a power play goal with a second to go in the third period.
That was either 5-4 or 6-5 or something
like that. Yeah. It was a real back-and-forth game. But anyways, they're getting closer to the nitty-gritty in the quarterfinals and the qualifying round, the preliminary round, which takes absolutely forever in the World Hockey Championship.
I was saying that to Dave before the show. Like, there's way too many games. Like, how many different European countries does Canada have to beat, right? Like, they've gone through Great Britain. Yeah. You know, is German. Ireland next?
Well,
like,
I'm not sure if Ireland qualified for the tournament this year, but they might have. I mean, what is it? It's a 16-team tournament, two pools of eight, and you play, you know, round robin in your pool, so seven preliminary games or something. Takes forever. I mean, it's certainly a lengthy tournament, and while we enjoy bringing you coverage of it, it does take a long time.
Yeah, that's just it. It's a function of taking a long time to get this thing done and into where people start to really focus on it.
Yeah, exactly right. Anyways, let's get started with some Winnipeg Jets discussion on this Saturday afternoon. I mentioned the Esa Lindell clip that we played off the top of the show, and then the Josh Morrissey clip. Esa Lindell, Dallas Stars defenseman, earlier this week signs a 6-year, $34.8 million contract extension with the Dallas Stars. It's going to pay him an average annual value of $5.8 million. That's his salary cap hit for the next six seasons. I look at this contract and I say, what does this mean for Josh Morrissey?
I say, that's a lot of money.
I say, it's a lot of money too. But for Josh Morrissey, to me, what this does for the Winnipeg Jets and what this does for Josh Morrissey is it sets the floor for Josh Morrissey. There's no way that Josh Morrissey, when he is eligible for a contract extension, that comes up on July 1st, by the way, because he'll be entering the final year of his current deal. To me, Josh Morrissey's representation goes to the Jets management and says, Esa Lindell just got $5.8 million a year. Josh Morrissey's better than Esa Lindell. Both of them are left-side defensemen, of course.
Yep.
Morrissey's numbers are better than Esa Lindell's. Morrissey's advanced stats are better than Esa Lindell's. The floor is at $5.8 million, but you're looking more at probably $6.5 million, give or take, on a multi-year deal for Josh Morrissey going forward.
Well, you know, you mentioned the contract, but Morrissey is just a better defenseman than Esa Lindell.
No question.
Mean, take away the contract. You mentioned the advanced stats. The offensive numbers, Drew, are actually very similar. I mean, these are guys that are, you know, 25 to 35 points. Lindell, you know, coming off of the career year, and he was really good in the playoffs for Dallas. And, you know, just as an aside, you look at, you know, the Dallas blue line with Miro Heiskanen, John Klingberg, you know, Esa Lindell. I mean, It's a very good group of defensemen. You know, they got Jamie Oleksiak back, even though he was injured during the playoffs. But, you know, I really like how that blue line is shaping up for the Dallas Stars. And, you know, when you talk about Morrissey, I mean, I still think there are better comparables for Lindell. But when you talk about the salary, just to, you know, to get into Lindell specifically,
yeah.
I mean, that was way more money than I thought he was going to get. I mean, $5.8 million. Yeah. I mean, you're basically paying him for 2 years. Because I remember going back to when, you know, we always talked to Mike Hyka, our very good friend, regular contributor to the program. Mm-hmm. He was with the Dallas Morning News. Now he's with the Dallas Stars team. He writes for their website. And when Lindell came into the NHL 4 years ago, you know, this wasn't a high pick, you know, as opposed to Morrissey.
Third round draft pick.
Yeah, it was Lindell a third round pick. So he took a little while to you know, work out in the American Hockey League, develop, I should say, in the American Hockey League. So the expectations for Lindell, they were a little bit lower, I would say. I think you guys would agree. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about Morrissey, everybody kind of envisioned Morrissey as a top-pairing guy for the Jets, whereas Lindell, you kind of weren't sure, was he going to be a second-pairing guy? It looked at maybe looked like earlier maybe his ceiling was going to be a third-pairing guy. Now it's pretty clear he can be a second-pairing guy. But
And that's where he is on the Stars, because Heiskanen is also a left-side defenseman. Right. Heiskanen, there's no question, is better than Lindell. Right.
And then if you need Lindell to play some big minutes on the top line, he can. He's a big body.
Yeah.
He's a good player. But when you're talking about Morrissey, again, getting back to what everybody wants to talk about, Morrissey, you know, last year of his contract, how much is he going to get on his next contract? I think, Dave, you would agree that on his next contract, he's going to be somewhere between $6-$6.5 million a year. And I think when he didn't sign the long-term contract, we knew that he was going to be, you know, somewhere between $3-$3.5 million. But the players that I'll throw out there, Drew, that are better comparables for me are Matt Dumba and Shea Theodore. And I think another guy you have to keep an eye on is Darnell Nurse, because Darnell Nurse signed his contract, I think it was the day after or the day before Josh Morrissey back in September. So when you're talking about Nurse, another 2013 NHL draft pick, he's a guy that his next contract, he's going to be somewhere around $6 million, $6.5 million. So that's going to be interesting to see how much Nurse gets from Edmonton. But absolutely, if you have a guy like Esa Lindell making $5.8 million AAV, there's no way Morrissey makes less than that.
They've each have the same number of points in their career, with 77 in they've each played three professional seasons at the NHL level.
You got to keep in mind, though, Morrissey missed 23 games.
That's
right?
What I was about to say. Yeah. Morrissey's played fewer games than Lindell.
Not by much, though. 16.
By 16. But this year, if you look at if this was the year for Morrissey's offensive breakout, look that he had 1 point less than Lindell all season.
With a lot less games.
With 23 less games. So you can see that Morrissey was clearly going to be between a 40 and a 45 point guy for the Jets this year, probably, had he played the full season. We know that he is their Jets' number one top pairing left side defenseman, and it's not just because the Jets don't have anyone better than him, it's because he is a bona fide top pairing left side defenseman in the NHL. So if you're Josh Morrissey's representation, you are happy with this contract that Lindell signed because you are better than him, and your representation is going to Jets management and saying, hey, you know, this is the absolute floor, but it's going to be closer to the $6.5 million mark, at least on a long-term deal.
And I think that's probably was understood by the Jets management, was that when they signed him to that bridge deal, that, you know, there was a likelihood that Josh Morrissey was going to cost them a lot more as he continued to develop and become that guy who was going to be the shutdown defenseman with Jacob Trouba, and the fact that he is the big minute eater. Obviously, not a ton of guy time on the power play, but at the same time, you know, he's a guy who is seen as a big, you know, one of the leaders on this team. And we talked about the idea of leadership, and Josh Morrissey's name is the one that gets bandied about more often than not, in terms of the young core and who you can see taking a letter and having that responsibility. So to me, Josh Morrissey is a guy who, you know, yeah, Drew, I agree with you and I agree with Ez. I think this is a guy whose number is starting, you know, in that 6 to 6.5 range, and is only going to go up because, again, he's a guy from the Jets perspective, he's a homegrown guy in the sense that you drafted him, you've developed him, played him in the American Hockey League, and now he's going to get that long-term contract that the Jets are going to basically say, you're ours for the next, you know, however many years.
Right, and I was just going to mention that, Dave, because you mentioned long-term, but long-term now is 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be 8 years, and I was going to say that, you know, I would expect it probably not to be 8 years, even though if I'm Chevy, I would love to lock him up for 8 years, sure. But if you're Morrissey, you're probably saying, well, again, and I use Matt Dumba, and Dumba was a 2012 draft, mm-hmm. as opposed to Morrissey, as we talked about, 2013 in New Jersey, we were there, and
no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal.
I was expecting a no big deal. I was thinking, in my head,
I thought you would jump in with that.
I'm not
That's
joking. In my head, I was thinking the whole
we
time.
We have a trade to announce.
When Ezzy said that, I was thinking to myself, no big deal.
Yeah, that's your line, Dave. I know, stole your line.
I know, but I didn't want to interject.
You're going to want to hear this.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about Shea Theodore, he's a 2013 draft pick late in the first round. But the difference between Morrissey and Theodore is that Theodore took longer to get to the NHL, right? Mm-hmm. Because the Golden Knights, you remember, gave him that contract after one full year,
mm-hmm.
right? And he had some injury problems with the Ducks and all that. But when you're talking about Morrissey, I think Dumba's a really good comparable, but mm-hmm. even if you only sign Morrissey to 5 years, I think you're looking at 6 to 6.5. Maybe if it's going to be a 7 or 8 year deal, maybe it gets closer to $7 million. but I would expect it to be right around 6 to 6.5. And yeah. you know, we
and
talked
and
about
if you're Morrissey, to your point, right. Ezzy, 5 years is what he wants because it gets him right. another opportunity when right. he's in his late 20s.
He'll be 29.
You know, he'd be 29. He mm-hmm. gets to strike it rich again at 29, yeah. and he can sign another 5 or 6 year deal at that point in time.
I would expect it to be 5 years if yeah. if I was a betting man.
Yeah.
I mean, I obviously, you know, we could see an 8 year contract. I don't see why it would be 6 or 7. I mean, to me, it's either 5 or 8. Like, why would you if you want to sign him long term, why would you sign him to 7 as opposed to 8? Because right. you have the option to give him that extra year
because mm-hmm. because you already have him under right. contract and yeah. he's a member of your team. I should just make note. You mentioned Dumba as a comparable.
Yep.
Dumba signed a 5 year, $30 million contract yep. last July, just under a year ago,
yep.
July 21st, 2018. He signed a year, 5 year, $30 million contract. Right. My prediction, and this is strictly a prediction.
I think Dumba's underpaid, by the way. I think
he outperformed, I think, at $6 million yeah. bucks a season. I think he's yeah. outperformed that. He outperformed that mm-hmm. contract this year. I mean, when he went down for the Wild, that was sort of the end of their season.
Well, aside from Suter, he's their best defenseman. If he's not already their best defenseman, we know that, you know, Suter is a little gray in the tooth.
Yeah.
You know, no offense to Suter. I mean, he's a really good.
Gray in the tooth? Good. You need to go see Linden Market Dental Center, Dr. Les Rikus.
If you are having
gray teeth, you need to, you know, something's wrong with your teeth there, buddy.
That's the saying, right? Gray in the hair,
gray in the temple, gray in the beard.
It's gray in the beard.
It was yeah. gray in the tooth.
Gray in the beard, which actually has
long in the tooth.
Yeah, long,
yeah,
in,
long
the
in the tooth.
Long in the yeah. tooth. Yeah, gray in the tooth. Oh, God.
Chris, back me up here. Is that an actual saying, gray in the tooth?
No, that's certainly not. Chris...
I think I've heard that before.
You only heard it because you just said it on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, yeah. but it actually has – nobody in history has ever used that expression yeah. ever.
I actually have gold in my teeth. I have a crown, so.
Yeah, well, that's good there, Flava Flav. You know. In any event, yeah, Dumba got 5 years, $30 million. What I was going to say, and this is strictly a prediction – no basis of I don't know anything, mm-hmm. but my prediction, it seems like there's an MO with the Jets that right at the start of training camp every year, they sign somebody.
Yeah, like Little signed.
Little Wheeler yep. last year, yep. remember, it was right at the start of training camp, he signed his extension. My prediction will be that Morrissey will sign a long-term deal with the Jets at the right around the start of training camp in September. For you know, at that point in time, the Jets will know their cost certainty for the players that right. are on their roster. Yep. They know that they want Morrissey to be a key member of this team going forward. We've talked about leadership. We've talked about just, frankly, without him, they'd be in desperate, dire straits.
Yeah, it'd be unbelievable.
So that would be my prediction, is that Morrissey will get a long-term deal done before the start of training camp for the Jets.
And the other thing I would mention is Scheifele's the only player who signed an 8-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm. And he's regretting that today.
Well, yeah. and obviously, you know, Scheifele is arguably, I would say he's the Jets' best player, best offensive player, probably best forward. I
mean, better than Wheeler?
I would say so, but when you're talking about, it's obviously between Scheifele and Wheeler, and then Connor and Lion A are pretty close. The Jets have some pretty darn good forwards, but you know, back to what I was going to say though about the 8-year deal.
Yeah,
I mean, you leave a little bit of money on the table, and obviously, you know, Scheifele signed that deal, Dave, mm-hmm. before he had his breakout season, his you know 80 points back to back seasons, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about Morrissey, you wonder if his agent is looking at that 8-year deal and he's saying, you know, that's probably more reason to sign a 5-year deal because, you know, you might be leaving a little money on the table. So again, you know, Morrissey might end up signing an 8-year deal, but
I'd be surprised.
I would think it's probably going to be more around 5 years.
It seems like most of the players now.
Well, yeah, I mean, and if you think about it,
maybe
you,
6.
That leaves, like you said to your point, Drew, earlier in the segment, that leaves you that opportunity to say, okay, I'm 29, mm-hmm. 29 turning 30.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sign my last real big contract, and it's going to be a big moneymaker.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's when you don't mind signing an 8-year deal at that point.
And if you think about it, that's what Tyler Myers is doing. Right now, Tyler Myers 29, so he's looking to get that last big contract. And we know he's probably going to get it. So mm-hmm.
Are you talking about the Myers that's playing at the World Hockey Championship, or is that Phil Myers?
That's Philip Myers. Different Myers altogether. Yeah. But I noticed that.
Was
as
I
well.
The only one that thought that when Canada announced that Myers was going to be playing defense, you thought that was Tyler Myers?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't know who Philip Myers was. I'm like, who is this guy? He played for the Flyers last season.
Like, we've been waiting weeks for a Jet to go over and play in the World Hockey Championship.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny.
Well, you got bogged in. Bogdan Kislevich.
Yep,
that's right.
And Marco Dano.
He's technically not a
that's
Jet,
true.
Though, right?
Well, he is a Jet. He never played a game for the Jet.
He's still Jets property. Yeah. Still at the NHL
just
level.
Just never played a game for the Jets.
Right.
Marco
he's not
Dano
going to.
Played a game for the Jets last season.
That's right.
Just not this season.
That's right. And he was a regular with the Moose.
But he's a Jets property.
That's true. Yep.
So Marco Dano.
When we come back, a player who may or may not be Jets property, for a while longer is Jacob Trouba. The TSN trade bait board was debuted earlier this week. Trouba came in at number 2 on the trade bait board. We talk about Trouba. We talk about the trade bait board next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday afternoon on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Same answer as always. I'll figure it out once things get going in the summer. What's best and move forward from there. We got to sit down and kind of have a meeting and figure out what to do moving forward. So I haven't really thought about it, or I tried to put it in the back of my mind as much as I could this year and just forget about it, and we'll deal with it when the time comes.
Jets defenseman Jacob Trouba. They'll deal with the contract status. They'll deal with his future as a member of the Winnipeg Jets when time comes.
Is that Muse that we were just listening to?
That was Muse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good band.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
Live?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I haven't seen them either. Have they been?
Actually, I haven't seen a concert in a really long time. But as you know, yeah, once you have kids,
you're old and washed up.
You just don't leave. Like, you're a prisoner of your own
home.
You're
gray in the tooth and washed up. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday afternoon, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. They'll even fix Ezzy's gray tooth. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Drew, like, if you didn't do the Les Rikus read there, like, I would have had a huge problem with that.
It would have been unprofessional.
Yeah, the segue was just too good there.
Yeah. Your dead gray tooth just leads me perfectly into talking about Dr. Les Rikus, which also leads me perfectly into talking about Jacob Trouba.
Ooh,
sorry.
Almost had it.
Jacob
could
Trouba.
Be like a defenseman doctor.
Could be. He's not, though. He's just a defenseman. He's Jacob Trouba of the Winnipeg Jets. He debuted at number 2 on the TSN trade bait board, which was released by our buddy Frank Saravelli earlier this week.
Turn that ringer off, by the way.
I know you're
hiding your phone right now behind the table, but yeah, under the table.
Exactly. My father wants to know where the battery for the leaf blower is right now. Obviously,
hold on. Is Sheldon not power washing the deck?
He's not power washing the deck. Apparently, he's going to be doing some leaf blowing in my house, which is certainly not what I needed him
to
be doing.
That's the best the text is from your dad. That's awesome.
Like, he doesn't know that I'm on air right now.
In this defense, are your shows usually 9 to 12?
He's literally at my house watching my children because I'm here. So okay. He should know that I'm
on
air.
Sorry, Sheldon, I tried.
So hold on. Your dad is watching your son and daughter, and he decided that he wants to do a little leaf blowing? Or is that for his house?
No, I'm pretty sure it's for my house. I don't know why he determined that.
He looks after your kids and does some landscaping.
Well, I'm not...
It's like a little added bonus feature there.
I have no need for him to do landscaping at the moment. So
you've done it already? Have you done your raking and your mulching? And
I have. I mean, we have a big thing of dirt on our lawn that you're going to do our flower beds. I mowed, I raked the whole 9 yards. He's just taking upon himself to clean up after me, I guess, is what he's doing, which is very nice of him, I suppose.
He's not going to use the leaf blower in your house, is he?
You know, I'm
like,
not there.
Is that his way of like cleaning up the crumbs?
No, that's why we have a dog. We have a dog to clean up the crumbs. So I'm honestly not sure. I'm not there. But when I come home after the show, we'll see what the damage done with the leaf blower was. Jacob Trouba, number 2 overall on TSN's trade bait board, behind Phil Kessel, who takes the top spot on the trade bait board. I mean, obviously, the board, you know, doesn't...
All of a sudden, I'm hungry for a hot dog, but let's
the board
going.
Doesn't guarantee a trade, but, I mean, it does seem like it's more and more likely that Trouba will be traded. It was interesting. I don't know if you've looked at some of the contract projections that have happened, that Evolving Wild, which is a website, put out some contract projections.
Yep.
And they had Trouba's contract at 5 years and $7.3 million per season. I don't see how the Jets can fit that under their current salary cap. There's the question, does Jacob Trouba even want to sign that kind of lengthier contract here in Winnipeg? But when all the smoke that's going around, is Jacob Trouba going to be here long term? Is he going to be here at the start of next season? Arbitration's a possibility.
Right.
You know, given everything we know, 1 year away from UFA, do you think there's so much smoke right now that there's too much fire?
Yeah, and I mean, nobody has the answer to that, but when you look at last summer, right, that was the perfect opportunity for the Jets and Trouba to agree to a long-term contract extension, right? whether that was 5 years, 6 years, whatever, 8 years. We talked about it last segment with Morrissey. I mean, Trouba's the type of guy you want to lock him up long term. He's at an age, like, what is he, 25 years old? I mean, that's the age that you want to lock the guy up, 24, 25, right? Morrissey, 25. A year younger, right?
Yeah.
So when you're talking about, you know, 5 years, you know, 7.3, whatever it is, it's going to be somewhere in that range, Drew. I mean, the guys at Evolving Wild, they know what they're talking about. The guys at Cap Friendly also do a great job projecting salary and obviously reporting all the different salaries. They just flipped over to the 1920 season. But I think right now everything leans towards the Jets moving Trouba, because I don't think it's ideal if they end up going the arbitration route and then he's a pending UFA, and then that could potentially be a distraction, whether or not he could almost end up being, you know, this year's Artemi Panarin, mm-hmm. right? If he's only got 1 year left on his contract, mm-hmm. and, you know, the Jets, as we know, they're going, you know, they want to go on a long Stanley Cup run. I mean, this isn't a team that, you know, is just going to be happy to make the playoffs. You know, once you go to the West Final, they're going to be pushing to go far next year. So you're not going to want that to be a distraction. So right now it is kind of trending towards, you know, Trouba being traded, just because, as I mentioned, I mean, last year was when you expected, if Trouba was going to sign a long contract extension, it would have been last summer. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, that number and couldn't the Jets, you know, fit it in there? I mean, sure. If you take Tyler Myers money and you take, you know, Ben Sherratt's money, you take those two contracts off the book. I mean, it obviously, you know, doesn't just, it's not one for one like that, but they could, if they wanted to sign Trouba, Drew, they would find the money.
Well, I think it's and more the, I think if it's
they would find the room.
If it's Trouba, wanted to sign
exactly,
here,
right.
they would find the
yeah,
room.
And not, I think it's not the Jets needing to find room. It's whether or not Trouba wants to be here long term.
Yeah.
And you've also got Nyku and Pullman as in their last years of their entry level deal. Or no, right. Yeah, I think so. Right. So you got 775, not Pullman. Pullman's got two more years, but so it's 775. So those guys are both making under $1 million.
And we talked about it. If you needed to, you could move Kulikov's contract out or buy him out, whatever,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's a function of, I think, you know, again, it's a question of desire. And yeah. I don't take anything, and I said this on the show last week, and I've said this every time, I don't take anything from what Jacob Trouba says at the exit meeting, his tone. I don't read into it because he's fairly monotone, and he's pretty much says the same things over and over again. I mean, again, after the Western Conference Finals, if they got eliminated by Vegas, he was a little more chipper because obviously they were feeling good about the team. At the end of this one, when they get eliminated by St. Louis in six games, you know, everybody's noticeably grumpy
morose.
And not necessarily thinking, oh, okay, cool, let's think about next year already. Like, they're still kind of smarting from that. So again, do I see this becoming a problem if they can't get something done? Because the Jets are not in a position like Columbus. Like, look, say what you will, whether you respect the decision made in Columbus to go for it, to use their own, you know, UFAs at the end of the season mm-hmm. as if they were acquisitions and just say, okay, we're just going to go for it.
Yeah,
and
their own rentals.
Their own rentals yeah. and throw caution in the wind.
I hate that phrase, by the way. I think it's absolutely referring to a player that you have under contract
yeah.
and you know, sort of trying to justify it or as yeah. your own rental doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, sure. But
we like our team better with this guy and we're willing to lose him for nothing.
Right. So, but I don't think the Jets are in that position.
I agree.
Especially because you've traded away your first round pick the last couple of seasons. So you can't really afford, because, you know, again, I'm not saying that the Jets aren't restocking slowly but surely, and the defensive pool may be better, you know, in a couple of years. But at the same time, right now, there's a paucity of assets in my mind that you have currently. Can't afford to lose those guys. I got like Jacob Trouba for nothing.
We talked about it last week on the show. We said the entering this coming draft in Vancouver, mm-hmm. the Jets only have three draft picks right now.
Right now.
The only team with fewer picks in the entire NHL is the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? The Jets' draft fortunes changed dramatically if Jacob Trouba is dealt in the lead up to the draft or at the draft, and all of a sudden you go from not having a first round pick to probably having a first round pick if Trouba's dealt. I mean, assuming that you're going to.
I don't know about that. I think the Jets have to get back a player.
Well, they might get a player or maybe a second round, but whatever it is, you're likely going to end up with more than just the three picks you currently have if Trouba is traded.
Trouba is traded for a first or second round pick, then you have to get one of the. Whoever the Jets are trading with, you have to get a top prospect, right? Like, I think the likelihood of a one-for-one trade is very low.
I agree.
I mean, it's real. Like,
what team is unless that team is guaranteed, knows for sure mm-hmm. that they can sign Trouba to an extension,
what team
is trading a player with term on their deal?
Oh, 100%.
How many PK Subban for Shea Weber trades have we seen? Like,
The only Ryan Johansson and Seth Jones.
No, but that was forward for defensemen. Right. I'm talking
and
about
both guys had term on. Both guys had term where they weren't about to become free agents within a year.
We just don't see, especially defensemen. I think you see that more often where you see forwards for forward or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, it could be a top draft pick, Drew. But I agree with Dave. I think if you're the Jets, you're trying to fill a void on the right side or possibly on the left side. We talked about that last week. Yep. But I mean, you know, just talking about this trade bait board, guys, obviously, you know, here in Winnipeg, we're focused on Trouba, but, you know, you talk about Phil Kessel, but, you know, I just mentioned Subban. When you're talking about Trouba and Subban, you're talking about two top defensemen in the Central Division, right? I would say that Roman Josi is the Predators' best defenseman, and then Morrissey is the Jets' best defenseman, but you're talking about, you know, number two, number three. Whether you
Subban is number five on the trade bait board.
Right, and so you could argue maybe Matthias Ekholm is ahead of Subban, but the point is, Subban is one of the Predators' top defensemen. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about the power dynamic in the Central Division and Trouba and Subban, like David Poile and Kevin Cheveldayoff are going to have to nail these trades. I mean, there's just no room for error here because it could possibly change the dynamic in that division. Like Dallas, Colorado, St. Louis, they have now caught up to the Jets and the Predators, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't nail these trades, and we assume, you know, Trouba is more likely to be traded than Subban, but with what happened with Nashville, we're going to get into it later, Drew, but with what happened with Nashville, you know, in the first round, it was just an absolute...
They looked the mess.
It was a cluster F.
Well put. Well, not really, but anyways, good enough. When we come back, Mick Colaggio covers the Boston Bruins. The Bruins are on to the Stanley Cup Final. They're going to have 11 days off between when they clinched and when the Cup Final begins. We talk to Mick coming up next about the Bruins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, Saturday afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve. Best way to reach us here in the studio. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We are pleased to welcome back to the program Mick Colaggio. Mick covers the Boston Bruins for the New Bedford Standard Times. The Bruins sweeping the Carolina Hurricanes earlier this week. They're off to the Stanley Cup Final. Mick, good afternoon and thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Love talking hockey.
Well, yeah, we appreciate you talking with us there, Mick. You know, as I said, the Bruins with a clean sweep of the Hurricanes in commanding fashion, taking care of business down in Raleigh after they took care of business at home. Now the Bruins are sort of faced with the interesting situation of where they're going to have 11 days off between the end of the conference final and the start of the Stanley Cup final. How do you think that time off is going to affect the Bruins? Obviously, they'll be able to heal some bumps and bruises, but is that too much time off?
Yeah. I think it would be a lot better for them if it was about half that much. And I think that it's also tough that they're going to start the series at home because it's vital that the home team wins both of those games. A split, and it's a huge advantage to the other team. And the Bruins are going to be playing both of those games on home ice after all that time. And all they can hope for is that the preparation that they will do, they will resume practice Monday, and they will practice for a couple of days, and they're calling up their 10 black aces, and they're going to consider some formats for scrimmage work. There was speculation about them bringing in outside players. They certainly want to do all they can to simulate the game situation, but let's face it, how do you go from the peak of Stanley Cup playoff intensity to dress rehearsals that are just made up so that we don't get bored and start developing bad habits or get lazy with the repetition that practice often brings?
Mick, we could probably spend an entire segment talking about Tuukka Rask because if he hasn't already won the Conn Smythe Trophy, he's definitely the front runner right now for the Conn Smythe Trophy. And his best work was probably done in the conference final. I mean, you're talking about the shutout in Game 4. He only allows 5 goals in four games. His numbers over the course of the playoffs are just insane. Goals against average under two. Save percentage is .942. Like I said, Mick, I could go on and on with his accomplishments here in the playoffs. And he's obviously already won a Stanley Cup, and he's been one of the best goaltenders in the NHL for the last 10 years. But when you talk about that performance in the Eastern Conference Final, was that even surprising considering how well he played in the second round? Because it just didn't seem like Carolina could score on him at all.
Well, first off, Carolina hasn't been a high-scoring team. We saw this from Tuukka in 2013 against the Pittsburgh Penguins. First words out of Claude Julien's mouth when that sweep was over was, that was not a sweep. I don't think he even waited for a question. And that was a comment on how well Tuukka played. And let's face it, the Bruins have gone through many, many players on the road to putting together this team that is made up of the five guys who are on that Stanley Cup team in 11 and some tweeners like Torrey Krug and Kevin Miller, who's injured, et cetera. But then you get like about 10 guys who 2 years ago, or maybe it was even last year, I can't remember, they scored their first NHL goal, like eight of them that did so. So I think that the Bruins are getting there about a year early as far as the schedule goes for what was reasonable to expect and all things gone well. And not all things have gone well. I mean, some of the drafts didn't work out. Some did in the later rounds. This team, I will say this. I'm not sure I've ever seen a more formidable display of back pressure than we saw from the Bruins in Game 4. And they were like the White Walkers, the Army of the Dead in Game of Thrones. The ferocity, intensity, tenacity with which they challenged every possession all over the rink, it really made things a lot easier for the defensemen who really had to primarily make puck plays. And then you funnel that down to Rask, and he is like the prototypical goaltender who, if given a sense of expectation and a five-man defense that can funnel the expectation of a shot so that he can anticipate and put himself in front of it. A lot of goalies have stood on the shoulders of teams like that and won the Stanley Cup. He's one of the best I've ever seen at playing that kind of game. And some guys are great at taking a disastrous team and keeping it in a hockey game. And Rask has done that too for the Bruins over the years and gotten very little credit for it because they haven't taken advantage of the goaltending that he gave them in those situations. So you wind up with a situation where, yeah, he just leaves us at the altar. Well, not really. I think that, when the Bruins finally had a team that could defend as a five-man unit for four lines, then he is the kind of goalie who can play so cool and so sharp and then stand up when needed, like Justin Williams wide open in the slot. They get that one shot. They might have gripped it a little tight. Whatever it was, and Rask just snares it. And this is the kind of goalie he's always been able to be with the right team in front of him, and he's got the right team in front of him now.
You know, Mick, we talked about some of the negative aspects of a 10-day delay, but some of the positives, obviously, are guys getting healthy and having that opportunity. You talked about Miller. Chris Wagner is injured right now. What about Zdeno Chara? Obviously, he's a guy who didn't play in the last game, but do you expect him to be ready to go for the Stanley Cup final? And can the Bruins do it without a player like Zdeno Chara in the lineup?
I don't think so. I think they need everybody on defense in order to do this. I know that bringing Kevin Miller back, which is now not expected, at least for the start of a series, he's had yet another bit of a setback, and they won't define his injury. I heard a rumor, but what's the point?
Yeah.
Bottom line is I don't think they'll have him. And so it might be a little awkward for him to try to step in and play after being out as long as he has. And this team is in such a damn groove. But Chara is a different situation. When you have a defense that's young on the right side, is 21 and 22. Your top two ice time guys there on the right side, McAvoy 21, Carlo 22. Now Z is 42, I think, and now Krug and Moore, and they're in the prime of their career, but But, you know, and so is Camphor, good journeyman. But Clifton, entry-level player, does it with energy. He's able to stand on the shoulders of the back pressure and play his game and pounce on situations and make plays. And Cassidy, credit to Bruce for bringing it out of him and giving him the confidence to go out and do this and not try to dial down and be conservative. You're only a rookie. Watch out. None of that. It's like, no, do what you do that got you here. And this is the NHL right now. I do think the Bruins will be an underdog if San Jose wins that series, because they're talking about a veteran defense there. And the Bruins are still doing, so trying to do something here that's really unprecedented. They have McAvoy, who is usually your ice time leader, be 21 years old and at the end of his second full NHL season. That's just not in the record books anywhere.
Mick Colaggio is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mick covers the Bruins for the New Bedford Standard Times. And Mick, we don't know who the Bruins' opponent will be between the Sharks and the Blues, of course. Do you think the Bruins have any preference? Do they seem to match up better with one team versus another? Or is it just whoever comes out of the West?
Good question. I think that they have a mentality, and this includes David Backes, that they're so dialed in, so grateful for the opportunity that they've earned. And I warned you guys, I got a little thing going on. I no problem would they, you know, feel like, oh, these guys, we can beat these guys, we can't. They believe in their game. And they weren't really, I mean, I didn't have them beating Toronto. I had seven games, but I wasn't adamant. I just felt like these series are so close. And I look at the way I thought Toronto could exploit the matchup problems behind Z on the left shot side of the defense. And once Kadri was gone, the Bruins just were wearing them down, their depth. And so that situation, and then you say Columbus, they're a big, heavy team, a la Boston, L.A. of past seasons. And I look at that club and I say, wow. Those guys have had some time to develop, but they still get their wheels. Maybe, you know, Dubois a little young up top, but he's playing an agitator role. This team, I think, could actually do the whole thing. And what do the Bruins do? They win three in a row. They're not the master of any one style. They're the jack of all trades. They are a resilient group. They take whatever they need to do to win. The Bruins are an extremely power play reliant team. During the regular season. And when they acquired Charlie Coyle, they became a four-line team that could apply pressure and squeeze. And once you do that, then the opponent starts feeling it. And I think that's what the Bruins are now starting to do. They're getting better every round.
Mick, you mentioned David Backes earlier, and I wanted to ask you about Backes. I want to talk more about the big man from Minneapolis, 35 years old. And as you know, there has been a lot of discussion about Joe Thornton and, you know, how this might be his last opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. But when you're talking about Backes, this is his first time ever in a Stanley Cup final, his first opportunity to win a cup. Do you think that's going to be a bigger storyline in the Stanley Cup final about how this might be Backes' last chance to win a Stanley Cup?
Not bigger than Jumbo Joe. That'll be the Jumbo storyline of the finals if that happens. The Bruins never won. Maybe Chara would have been, but certainly Thornton will be the main story there. The guy's larger than life. I've always been a fan. He's always been great to me. I enjoyed him in Boston. It was time. Michael Connell wanted to get a number one defenseman, but Brad Stewart, you know, really didn't want to play here. But I think that Backes is a scenario where, yeah, it's a big deal. I think Backes is such a transparent guy. He really kind of lets you inside and lets you know what he's thinking. And I think for him, this is the culmination of a career where he's had to learn and develop camaraderie with entry-level players who aren't in the lineup when they're healthy. That has happened to him this season, as the game has just been too fast for him on some nights. And he lost weight trying to get faster and preserve his career, and he's done so. And then when the Bruins needed to match up better with Columbus, they brought him in, and the immediate effect was felt. And it's amazing what this guy still has. He still has great instincts for the game of hockey. I think the Bruins have been, their puck support offensively and defensively has been so good that when you have a slow guy like him with Big Z out there, they cover so well for each other and they're so networked into their game that those scenarios just have not been exposed. Torrey Krug is not a burner. You know, he Grizzlick, you know, he that kid one stride and he's out of the zone. Same for McAvoy. Krug, you know, the kid's very thick. He's built like a fire hydrant. So with all that awesome hand-eye talent he has to move the puck and run the power play, they've really limited the ability of opponents to exploit the lack of speed on the left side of Boston's defense. And the same for Backes in his scenarios. I think that they've just played so well together as a unit, playing five-man game and being so on top of everything and being so committed. It's taken on a life of its own. These Bruins are now greater than the sum of their parts.
Mick Colaggio covers the Boston Bruins for the New Bedford Standard Times. The Bruins 4 wins away from hoisting Lord Stanley's Cup. Mick, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Mick. When we come back, we do our recap of the Eastern Conference Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday afternoon, we're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Tuukka Rask has a shutout. 4-0 the score. 4-0 the sweep by his team. 2 series victories for Carolina. And Bruce Cassidy moving on to the Stanley Cup Final with his Boston Bruins.
Doc Emrick of NBC Sports with the call. The Bruins taking care of business in Raleigh, North Carolina, sweeping the Hurricanes. They're off to the Stanley Cup Final, where they will be, I think, the overwhelming favorite. That doesn't mean much in this day and age in the NHL, of course, if this playoffs have showed us anything. But right now, the Bruins certainly look like a well-oiled machine. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday afternoon, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. Wow, that's well over 30 years at this point in time. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall.
I didn't get to do this last talking segment. I guess we had a guest last segment, but...
You talk during the guest segments too, you
know? No, but I meant to say a non-guest yes. segment. I wanted to do it earlier in the show, but I want to give a big birthday shout out to my sister. It's her birthday today, Gillian, so happy birthday, my older sister, so got to get that in there.
Yes, the older and wiser and better of the Ginsburg siblings.
Oh, way better.
Yeah, it's really not even a competition at all.
I'm like my sister, but way less successful.
Yeah.
And a lot bigger.
Yeah, my sister's short.
Yeah, exactly. But there you go. Anyways, happy birthday to Gil.
Yep.
Boston Bruins, they're on to the Eastern Conference, to the Stanley Cup Final. They took care of the Hurricanes. I mean,
like, did that series end in 3 games? Like,
it might as well have. I mean, not that the Hurricanes no-showed the fourth game, but you sort of got the feeling that the Bruins were just a juggernaut.
Yeah.
You know, that when they scored the first goal, that gave them a hell of an advantage. But the second goal, you knew there was no chance the Hurricanes were coming back. The Hurricanes haven't scored enough in the playoffs or really all season long. And the way Tuukka Rask has been playing, you're lucky if you're going to get one goal by him, never mind needing 3 in that situation to take the victory.
Right. Well, yeah, and you know, we know the stats, guys. You go down 3-0, you know, only, what is it, 4 teams or 3 teams have ever done that. And, you know, it was funny, everybody was talking about, well, you know, Justin Williams did that in 2014 with the Kings, so, you know, they have him there, and it's like, you know, no disrespect to the Canes. This isn't the 2014 LA Kings, right? Yeah. Like, you don't have Andrzej Kopitar, Drew Doughty, you know, Jeff Carter. I mean,
Jonathan Quick. Yeah,
Jonathan Quick.
In his prime.
Not only that, this is a Carolina team that hasn't made the playoffs for 10 preceding seasons. So, I mean, you don't exactly have a lot to base that on. Obviously, Justin Williams aside, right. The team itself is a fairly, you know, young team. It's a up-and-coming team, but they don't have that kind of base to rely upon and say, okay, you know, we've got this.
That's right. They don't have the they don't necessarily think that they can come back in that situation, given the way the Bruins have been playing, given the way that Tuukka Rask has been playing. I mean, you just look at the Bruins. They were just clinical almost in that yep. four-game series in taking care of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Right. And, you know, if you read the Point Hockey, Mike Kelly, who we've had on the show many times before, they do a great job. And they're really into the inner slot shots mm-hmm. and the rush scoring chances. And, you know, basically the Hurricanes just couldn't generate enough goals from the inner slot. And you look at the Bruins, all their goals came from the inner slot. And we know the Hurricanes are able to generate offense, but Game 3, I keep going back to it, but when you're talking about Game 3, I mean, we know that the Hurricanes absolutely peppered Tuukka Rask in that first period, right? First mm-hmm. game in Carolina, right? You're down 2-0, and they mm-hmm. brought it all on, and we know what happened.
Well, they have like four power plays that period?
Well,
it was a lot.
It was three or four, yeah. I believe, and when you're talking about, you know, Rask, I mean, he just stopped all the shots. I think he had 35 in total in that game. And, you know, it's just, again, it's so difficult when you go down 3-0 because you know what's in front of you. It's so hard. Sure, you know, I'm sure Rod Brindamore was talking about, let's just win one game, send mm-hmm. it back to Boston and then mm-hmm. start with that. But the way the Bruins were playing, I just thought the Game 3 win was just such a dominating performance by Rask. And when you talk about the Bruins, I mean, the perfection line, Marchand, Pastrnak, and Bergeron, obviously they had the 8 points in Game 4, but for me, the story of really the entire Bruins run is all the contributions they're getting from all the lines, right? You're talking about guys like Sean Corrali have been chipping in, Chris Wagner, that was Game 3 that he left, right? He scored the goal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that fourth line has been really impressive. Unfortunately, you know, Carson Kuhlman came out of the lineup for Chris Wagner, but, you know, Wagner probably isn't going to play Game 1. We'll see what happens, you know, later on in the Stanley Cup final, because I don't think it's starting for another month. So when you talk about, I'm joking, obviously, it's 9 days from now, but when you're talking about, you know, the depth of the Bruins, I mean, it's just been really impressive. Charlie Coyle, Marcus Johansson, and Danton Heinen. Hit him with the Heinen on the third line. I mean, that third line has just been so incredible, scoring clutch goals. And you know, Don Sweeney recently was nominated for GM of the Year award. And mm-hmm. obviously, he's done a lot of good work, not just this past year before the trade deadline, but over the last few years. But Coyle has just given them so much depth up the middle. When you talk about Bergeron, David Krejci, and Charlie Coyle up the middle, and then Sean Corrali is the fourth line center.
Marcus Johansson.
That's a good 1-4.
Marcus Johansson, another guy they bring in at the mm-hmm. trade deadline. And what does he do? He goes a point a game, goes a goal and 3 assists in the series. Same as Coyle did, a goal and 3. It's sort of these, they weren't flashy moves. They were just, you're acquiring professional hockey players. And Charlie Coyle, who's always been, you've always wanted to see more from him. Mm-hmm. Maybe Boston is finally the spot where you can get more from him. We saw him in San Jose sort of earlier in his career, and then he was traded as part of the Brent Burns deal where he went to Minnesota, and he always underwhelmed a little bit in Minnesota. Maybe Boston now at this point in time is where he's going to find himself. But
he's
just
a Massachusetts kid. You know?
That's right. He's a Boston kid. He's from that area. You know, he's fit in perfectly to your point, Ezzy. Marcus Durant, you just acquire these professional hockey players.
Coyle's got 12 points.
He's been great. He's been a great acquisition.
You know, it's not like he's had like a small role, and mm-hmm. you're right, Drew. I mean, he always underachieved in Minnesota, right? They always thought, because he was part of the Burns trade, you always thought he's got to be a top six guy. But on Boston, he's a third line guy, and when you have Bergeron and Krejci, and you know, Krejci just, I mean, we know what he did in 2011. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he led the league in points that year, if I'm not mistaken. He had like 24 or 25 points. He always steps it up in the playoffs. So when you're able to now have Coyle as your third line center, I mean, that's just an embarrassment of riches. So, by the way, I don't think that the Bruins are as big of a favorite going up against the Sharks or the Blues.
I disagree.
If the Sharks and Blues go to 7 games, I mean,
Well,
if the Sharks have 3 series that go to 7 games, I mean, that's going to take a huge toll out of them.
You look at Erik Karlsson right now. Erik Karlsson looks like a shell of himself.
Can't skate.
He's playing on one leg.
I don't. And the thing is, like, doesn't Karlsson have like 15 points?
Well,
he hasn't been good.
I know. Like, he just can't skate.
But he's still putting up the points. It makes no sense to me. Like, the guy has one groin.
Well, he's playing remarkable. I mean, right now,
you have two groins,
Bruins,
right?
You do have two groins. You have a groin in each leg.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not a physiotherapist. I don't know what you want me to say.
Well, I mean, I think that's pretty. I don't think you need to be a physiotherapist to know.
I just wish I had one brain.
And the question is, though, not touching the Prince of Wales trophy, will that impact them?
No, it won't. Nor does the ref you suck chant impact
I love how there's still an article on NHL.com about the, not touching the Prince of Wales trophy and how it will impact this.
They got web space they need to fill.
But you know what I'm talking about, though? When you're talking about whether it's the Sharks or the Blues, because either of those teams mm-hmm. can represent the West, mm-hmm. I mean, you have some significant injuries on both of those teams, right? Erik Karlsson, and then you're talking about Vince Dunn.
Yeah.
I mean, Vince Dunn has been a key defenseman for the Blues. So, yeah, Chara's injured, and you possibly don't have Chris Wagner or Kevin Miller, but you have injuries on both sides.
Yep.
So I don't necessarily think the Bruins are just going to sweep whoever they play in the Stanley Cup final.
I don't think it'll necessarily be a sweep, but this is the Bruins Stanley Cup to lose at this point in time. I mean,
I agree. They're the favorite. I just don't know if they're like a resounding favorite.
They're a resounding favorite.
I don't
favorite.
Know about that.
I'd go more like... I think 60-40 or 55.
Well, I'll tell you what. 45. Next Saturday, actually, we're not on next Saturday, so we can't preview the Stanley Cup final.
57-43.
Yeah. 57-43. That's not overwhelming. Okay.
58-42.
When we come back, Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM NHL Radio is going to join us, talk a little bit about the Stanley Cup playoffs, talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs and Brendan Shanahan getting a 6-year contract extension. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday afternoon. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. From SiriusXM NHL Radio and NHL.com, we're pleased to be joined by Dave McCarthy. Dave, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Not too much, Dave. How are things in Toronto?
I don't know. A little quieter. I think we're potentially anticipating a little bit more to do this season at this time of the year, but things ended a little quicker than anticipated, so... A little quiet, you could say, things in Toronto.
Well, that's what I was going to start.
And that Raps-Bucks game last night wasn't helping either.
Not a good look. No.
That's what I was going to start with, Dave, is, you know, you see the Bruins into the Stanley Cup final now, having dispatched the Carolina Hurricanes in four games. We know, you know, what happened to the Lightning after the Blue Jackets took care of them. You know, how much of a segment in Toronto is saying, you know, what if? Because it seems like if you get past the Bruins and you're up 3-2 with Game 6 on home ice, you get past the Bruins, it seems like the path really opened up to get to the Stanley Cup final. And how much of that fan base in Toronto is saying, you know, what if this should have been our year?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's a segment of people that are thinking that way. I mean, Brendan Shanahan, Maple Leafs president, kind of alluded to that as well in remarks earlier this past week when he spoke. On the day that he signed his new contract extension, he said, you know, sometimes it appears further away than it actually is. And in this case, you know, it's kind of a case where people are sitting back thinking, well, again, here's third year in a row, Leafs couldn't get past the first round. But what if they had beaten Boston? What if they had not collapsed in game six when they were up 3-2 and Morgan Rielly put the team up 1-0 and the building was buzzing and it looked like the Leafs were right on the verge of sort of slaying that mythological boogeyman in the Bruins. What if they had won that game? What if they had found a way to play better in game seven and advance that way? You know, and then they would have faced the Columbus Blue Jackets, then they would have gone on to face the Carolina Hurricanes potentially. You know, there's a path there that you could legitimately say, well, if the Leafs beat the Bruins, they should have also found a way to beat Columbus and Carolina. So sometimes it's just, you know, finding a way to get past that one hurdle that seems to get in your way each and every year. And before you know it, you can find yourself vaulted to the Stanley Cup Finals. You know, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, find a way to beat the Chicago Blackhawks that one year like they did. If you're the Washington Capitals, find a way to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins, as they did last year. And that can be sort of the difference between going home early and finding yourself in the Cup Finals.
You know, Dave, just sticking with round one, you were talking about the Bruins-Leafs series, and then we want to get into the Shanahan contract extension. But for Leafs fans, does it help or does it hurt the fact that the Bruins swept the Hurricanes and they're going to be in the Stanley Cup final? I mean, do Leafs fans even care about that? Or are Leafs fans still saying, well, I mean, we lost to the Bruins in seven games, but they're such a good team. They're probably the Cup favorite right now.
Yeah, there's two schools of thought. There's some people who think, well, whoever beats my team, I want to see them lose right away. I don't want to see them go on and heaven forbid win the Cup. And then there are other people who will say, well, if you lose to the Cup winners, you know, I guess that kind of ties in more to what I was saying a moment ago, kind of an indication that we may not be as far off as we think we are. And, you know, through three rounds, the Maple Leafs have been the team that have given the Bruins the toughest competition. So maybe you take a little solace in the fact that hey, you know, unlike a year ago where it seemed like the Leafs were chasing the series, the Leafs were pretty well in control of their first round series against Boston until sort of late in Game Six when they came apart and then never really got it back together in Game Seven. So if you look at it like that, there was definite improvement from a year ago when they played Boston. They were in a position to win. Now it's just about learning to find a way to close the deal and get it done when you are in command. And sometimes that can be the last step toward, like I said, finding yourself going much deeper in the playoffs.
You know, Dave, while NHL hockey has ended in Toronto, AHL hockey is still alive and well. You've got the defending Calder Cup champion, Toronto Marlies, who won it all last year. And now they're 8-0 in these playoffs. They're one up over the Charlotte Checkers right now in the Eastern Conference Finals. How much attention is being paid to the Leafs AHL affiliate right now in Toronto?
Well, probably more than you'd think, because the Leafs are going to have a number of spots open come training camp next year that will be available for jobs to be won, with you know, people just moving out the door. A lot of spots on defense with Ron Hainsey as a free agent, Jake Gardner is a free agent. Then you look at some serious injuries in Travis Dermott, who will likely miss the start of next season with shoulder surgery. So there's a spot that will be available at least for a few weeks. You look up front, Zach Hyman with ACL surgery, not likely to be ready for the start of next season. So there's a potential job to be won for a few weeks. So, you know, you look then down to the Marlies, because the Maple Leafs are going to be in a cap crunch. They're not going to have a lot of dollars and cents to go out on the free agent market. So you're going to need to look in-house for some answers. So that you can put some guys on the roster who, you know, by all intents and purposes, are essentially playing for free, right? Playing for the league minimum. And then you look no further than guys like Rasmus Sandin on defense, who has had a tremendous impact in his rookie year in the American Hockey League, which is rare for an 18-year-old defenseman to have such an impact in the AHL. He's played really well all year long. He's looked poised with the puck. He's shown himself to be a guy that can skate with the puck, break it out with efficiency, confident in his own end. A guy that really looks like he's pushed for an opportunity. And there were periods of time late in the season this year where people started to ring that bell and say, "Oh, you know, maybe Rasmus Sandin should get a look here late in the year." And you know, Mike Babcock and Kyle Dubas threw cold water on that pretty quickly, saying, "You know, let's not get in our own way here. Let's let the kid develop. You don't want to rush anybody." But next year, there's no reason why he wouldn't get a look. And then up front, Jeremy Bracco, a guy that really had a tough time even getting in the lineup a year ago in the American Hockey League, finished second in the AHL in scoring this year, and has been just a dynamic player all year long. So, you know, there's a guy that looks like he might be able to produce some offense and won't cost very much. So there's a couple of guys right there that have a lot of eyes on them. Timothy Liljegren, another defenseman, a right-handed shot defenseman, no less, has steadily improved, according to the head coach, Sheldon Keefe. So there's another guy who might get a look. There's a number of players down there with the Marlies who are having impacts this year who could have an impact with the Maple Leafs as soon as next fall.
Dave McCarthy of NHL Network Radio is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, Jake Gardner is, of course, going to be an unrestricted free agent, and we're in the time of year now where everyone's looking at contract projections and what they might get on the open market, and we're using the projections courtesy of the folks at Evolving Wild, and they could project Jake Gardner getting 7 years and just under $7 million per season.
Not from the Leafs.
Not from the Leafs, clearly, but you know, if somebody was given Jake Gardner 7 years and $7 million per season, what would you say about that contract?
I don't know if I'd want to do that. I'd look at six times six, though. You know, I think six is a nice number for Jake Gardner, because he's the type of guy that, if you are looking for someone to quarterback your power play and play in your top four, he's a cure-all defenseman, right? He cures that issue right away. But he's best when he's not theoretically the best defenseman on your team. You don't want him playing against the other team's top line 23 minutes a night. You want him playing in your secondary pair, I think, 18 to 21 minutes a night. And that's why I think when you get up around 7, then you're getting into a different stratosphere. But if a team could get him for 6x6, and again, the term kind of scares me as well. I'll put it this way. If he wants 7, I wouldn't go any higher than 5, kind of like the James Van Riemsdyk deal last year. I would want to keep the term a little bit lower. If he wants 6 or 7, the amount of money per year has got to come down. So 7x7, I think, is too much. I'd go 6x6. If he wants 7 years, I'd look at a number under 6. That might be a tough sell, though. So that's why I think 6x6 is the best deal.
Dave, final question for you. We mentioned, you know, the Brendan Shanahan news, obviously, from earlier this week. He signs the 6-year contract extension. And, you know, there were some in the hockey world that were a little bit surprised by that. And they were saying, well, the Leafs have lost, you know, in the first round 3 years in a row, while others were saying, you know, Shanahan has completely revolutionized this team and he has them heading in the right direction. Obviously, when you run into the Bruins in the first round, a couple times, that doesn't help. But when you're talking about, you know, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment and their decision to sign Shanahan to 6 years, is it what I just mentioned, why this happens? Because Shanahan has this franchise really trending in the right direction for the long term?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, number one, he didn't want to go anywhere. He wanted to continue. And then if you're the organization, there's really no need for a change. I mean, you look at where the team was when he got on board, and it's light years ahead of where it was. Have they got to the ultimate goal? No, not even close. But is there continuing potential for them to reach that goal over the next 6 years, the duration of Brendan's new contract? Absolutely. So it's not like they're in a window that's basically shut this year. So I'm of the mind that you don't want to be continuing to recycle managers and sort of getting in your own way every 3 or 4 years just because you don't win a Stanley Cup. Everything is trending in the right direction. There was no need for a change. Now, have I agreed with every move that Brendan has made? No, but you know, search me to find a manager, an executive, or a coach, really in any sport at any time where everyone's going to agree with 100% of the moves they made. But have I agreed with a lot of what he's done? Absolutely. So I think at this point, given the fact that Brendan wanted to return. Given the fact that the Leafs are going in the right direction, you want to maintain continuity and cohesion and a straight-ahead approach with the plan that it was in place. You want to bring in someone new, and then all of a sudden the plan gets changed, and then you're sort of looking to rework things on the fly again. You've done good work as an organization over the last 5 years to tear down, build a foundation, watch the fruit of that labor start to grow and blossom and take hold and establish itself at the NHL level. And now the window is open for the next 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years. I think a long time. So to me, it makes sense to stick with the guy who put that plan in place and continue to try to see it move forward under the same leadership.
Dave McCarthy covers the NHL for SiriusXM NHL Network Radio. You can read his work as well at NHL.com. Dave, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
All right, boys. Keep well.
Take care, Dave. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss the state of the Nashville Predators. They're in store for a very interesting offseason with some upheaval in Music City, Tennessee. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
That's a tough pill to swallow, and, you know,
You know, to some people it may not matter, but, you know, for us we feel really comfortable, and we like the guys that we had. We felt we had all the tools and, you know, to win and to be a successful team. And but, you know, we didn't get it done.
That's P.K. Subban speaking at the end of the season for the Nashville Predators. You remember, of course, the Predators losing in the first round to the Dallas Stars. A very interesting offseason in Nashville, much like the one here in Winnipeg. Two teams with Stanley Cup aspirations that both had disappointing seasons. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction for all your real estate needs. Come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So the Predators, you know, similar to the Jets in that they had a disappointing season.
Changes are coming for that team.
I see the Predators having more upheaval than the Jets.
Yep.
Because I agree think with the that. Predators window is more closed now than the Jets' window is. You look at the Predators' season, and yes, they finished atop the Central Division, but at no point in time this year did you think that the Predators were certainly as dangerous as they were 2 years ago when the Jets beat them in the second round, or 3 years ago when they went to the Stanley Cup final. There just always seemed to be drama surrounding this team, and finishing atop the Central Division did a lot to salve that wound, but you never really felt that this Predators team was firing on all cylinders.
No, and you know who thought Rocco Grimaldi was going to lead the Predators in scoring? It was actually Roman Josi, but Rocco Grimaldi had 3 goals. He had the most goals for the Predators. But when you're talking about that top line, I mean, Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson, Philip Forsberg, I mean, it's still like they've been out of the playoffs now for, what, a month?
Mm-hmm.
And it's still amazing to me that Arvidsson didn't have a single point.
Mm-hmm.
Philip Forsberg had 2 points, and I think Ryan Johansson also had 2 points. So the fact that the top line had a combined 4 points, and it's not like they were swept. They lost in six games. So, yeah. Like, Victor Arvidsson was arguably their best forward all year long.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had some injury problems when he came back. I mean, when Subban and Arvidsson, Dave, came back from their injuries,
mm-hmm.
it was like the equivalent to Morrissey and Buff coming back for the Jets, right? So when you're talking about, you know, the Predators, they just didn't score enough.
Yeah.
And the guys that you count on to score, Kyle Turris is a guy, guys, that to me is really interesting because you look at his contract status, he's actually got 5 years left at $6 million.
That contract looks absolutely horrendous right now.
It's not Milan Lucic, but it's not that far off.
He had an abysmal year, well, Kyle Turris did. I mean,
and you have to ask, is he a second-line center in the NHL, or is he better to be better off as a third-line guy? Because, you know, you watch Turris, and, you know, I think he only had one goal in the playoffs.
One goal, one assist. He only had 7 goals all season long.
No, he had a bad regular season. Wasn't he a healthy scratch at one point?
Yeah, he was. He had 23 points in 55 games for the Predators this year.
And we know he was in Laviolette's doghouse and all that. But, mm-hmm. you know, guys, it comes down to what Drew mentioned about the Predators' window, because the Predators don't have Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, Jack Roslovic, Christian Vesalainen. The point I'm trying to make is they don't have the embarrassment of young prospects like the Jets do. So the Jets window has just opened, whereas the Predators window has what, a year, 2 years, maybe 3 years, Dave? I mean, it's not a young team. Pekka Rinne doesn't have a lot of hockey left. He's got 1 or 2 years left.
He's got 2 years. They signed him to a two-year, right. $10 million
right.
extension.
And I more so meant, as the number one goalie, because you got UC Saros there pushing for starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the Predators, I mean, it's an aging roster.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, you do have some young prospects. A guy like Elli Tolvanen, I mean, they think, very highly of him.
He was very good. When I watched him in the American League this year,
he's a very good player with Milwaukee.
And
he's going to be a good player in the NHL, but you talk about, some of the prospects and the draft picks that they've given up over the, mm-hmm. over the years, right? And you've got guys like Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle pending UFAs. I mean, I don't expect those guys to be back. I mean, maybe you keep one of those two, but certainly Brian Boyle, I don't think is going to be back. And that's nothing against Boyle or Simmonds, Dave. I think you're just looking at a team that has to go in a different direction. P.K. Subban and Kyle Turris are the two big things to me, because when you're talking about Subban, obviously that would be a big one. For him to be traded, you know, again, for the second time in his career would be really surprising. But when you're talking about Turris, I think you gotta be stronger up the middle. I just don't think Turris is the guy there in Nashville, and I just think, you know, he's overstayed his welcome.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I think the fact is, it's amazing when you talk about embarrassment of riches, as if you reflect back on what Nashville has had, especially from the defensive point of view. I do think that this is a team that's on the downward spiral. And I think David Poile is going to have a big, Drew, you said this earlier in the show, he and Kevin Cheveldayoff are going to have a really busy, or maybe as he said it, sorry. Mm-hmm. But I think the truth is that he's going to have an extraordinarily busy one, because again, you look at this, you look at their Milwaukee affiliate, and they have, like as he said, they've got a couple of guys who have been okay, who've been able to put the puck in the net, but they don't have that huge amount of talent because they've traded a lot away because they expected.
I was going to say Dante Fabbro played in the playoffs. He's one of their other top prospects. He's the 2017 second rounder.
And him being in there is, I think the Fabro's potential is what can lead them to trade Subban. I don't think they're going to, I think Fabbro, they think they're going to, I mean, he stepped in the playoffs.
He was a first rounder.
Yeah, he stepped into the playoffs and played well for the Preds. And they think that, you know, Subban, you know, if you trade Subban, you get his $9 million off the books. Fabbro can play a lot of those minutes and can play a lot of the role. You know, Subban had a down year, so I don't know if anybody's willing to really jump on that contract right now. He wasn't very good this year for the Preds. Ekholm wasn't great for the Preds this year as well. But Dave, to your point, this Predators team is just definitely a team in flux. You don't, right now, if you were to say rank the futures of the top teams in the Central Division, so the Jets, the Avalanche, the Predators, the Blues, and the Stars, you might put the Predators at the bottom of that list of teams.
Yeah.
I mean, just based on the top flight talent.
Well, especially if you're looking future, if you're not just thinking potentially one last year, if you're talking about for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Even just looking at next year. I mean, you know, the Avalanche, MacKinnon, Rantanen.
And the draft picks are going to get in 2019.
Draft picks that they're going to get. I mean, they pick fourth overall this coming draft. Mm-hmm. You look at the Blues. I mean, we see them. They're in the Western Conference Final right now, and they still certainly have a lot of good young talent coming through there.
Yep.
The Wild are certainly at the bottom, and the Blackhawks are a step behind the Predators. But you look at the Stars. I mean, right now with guys like Heiskanen, and you know, you still have Ben and Sagan. I mean, they're not going anywhere. I mean, right now the Predators don't seem to be as good as the other teams in the Central Division.
Yeah, and you know, going back to PK Subban, Drew, if I'm David Poile, I'm thinking really hard about keeping Subban. I realize that, you know, he's coming off of a down year, but you look at the year before, he was a 59-point defenseman. Like, you forget that he's still a former Norris winner. Like, I don't think, you know, anybody's going to say PK Subban is as good as he used to be, right? Like, 4 or 5 years ago, he probably peaked in Montreal when he won the Norris Trophy.
Yeah. He wasn't good last year.
Well,
though,
he's still at the very least. Like, if he's not a top 20 defenseman anymore, he's still, like, top 30. Like, I mean, nobody's going to say like PK Subban's a bad defenseman.
No.
He could still play a top four role on any team. I mean, unless you guys disagree with that. I mean,
at $9 million a season, you need more from him than just being a top four defenseman. The problem is, the reality is, his contract probably makes his contract. I don't know if he's untradeable, but he certainly, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people knocking down the door to get PK Subban at $9 million a season and coming off the year that he had for the Predators.
But I still think if you're going to trade Subban, it's similar to Trouba. It goes back to what we talked about during the first hour, right? Like, if you're trading Subban, you have Ellis, Subban, and Fabbro on that right side. And Matthias Ekholm and Subban have been such good D partners. Like, I agree with you. Subban last year, when he came back from his injury, he didn't look like the same guy. He struggled. Yeah. I'm also a fan of Subban, so I'm, being a fan shouldn't factor into your analysis, but I've always liked the guy, and I think that, you know, he gets a bad rap some of the time, and I just think that when you're David Poile, and David Poile, by the way, is one of the smartest GMs out there. He's done an excellent job with the Preds, but I just think, you know, you don't want to rush into trading a guy like this, even if he's making a lot of money. For me, you're looking at trading Turris for sure. You want to get rid of that contract.
When you're
talking about Subban, I mean, well, that's for him to figure out. I think you probably have to sweeten the deal.
Yeah,
I don't see, you know, the season Turris had, I just don't see them bringing him back and playing the same role. If they're going to keep him, he's got to be a bottom forward. He's just not good enough. But when you're talking about, you know, what you're going to get, how are you going to move him? I agree. It might be tough, but I think they have to be better up the middle, because the hallmark of the Preds has been their defense. They're top four. We know that. But That was a big weakness for them in the playoffs.
It was a bad trade and a bad contract, and they need to rectify that problem if the Predators want to reaffirm themselves as one of the top teams in the Central Division. When we come back, Mike McKenna is going to join us. We'll talk about the conference finals. We'll talk about the NHL with him. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.